Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be here moderating today's webinar on how to combat the negative image and stereotype of collections. The debt collection industry, for better or worse, has a stigma attached to it. Debt collectors are viewed as mean, ruthless individuals out to ruin the lives of innocent people. But of course, as we know, that could not be more wrong. In this webinar, sponsored by VOAPS, we have a panel of leading industry executives who are here to share their strategies for helping combat this unfortunate stereotype and how to present the collection industry in the positive light it deserves. This webinar is being generously sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick second and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insight to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Gordon Beck is the president and COO of Valor Intelligent Processing, a new organization in the ARM industry specializing in BPO and third-party collections. Gord has 22 years of experience with expertise in the recovery of wireless, landline, cable, satellite, internet, VoIP, and financial institutions. Gord is known as a motivator, educator, and great public speaker in the industry, participating in panels, debates, and several individual speeches at industry-related events, as well as contributing articles and content to several call center publications. Gordon was recently named one of the 50 most influential collection professionals in the industry, and his trademark is driving unmatched performance through his treatment of his employees and the incredible culture in his call centers. On September 24th, 2018, Gordon became the youngest ever inductee into his high school alumni's Hall of Fame, specifically as a result of his accomplishments in the ARM industry. Harry Strausser is currently a freelance speaker and consultant within the ARM industry. He is a second-generation collection professional and held the position of president of two successful collection firms until they were sold in May 2017. He is the president of his own educational and consulting business, Interact Training and Development. He has been active in ACA International for more than 30 years, in which he is a senior certified trainer. He has served on the ACA International Executive Committee and held the position of president in 2004-2005. Unfortunately, Roger Weiss is not available to participate today. He does send his best wishes along. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once it has concluded. To submit a question, please hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel, type in your question, and hit enter or send. I'm not sure what the button says, but probably one of those things. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everybody to reserve a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after today's webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your participation helps me develop content that is what you're looking for and to make sure we have the speakers you want to hear from. Definitely the case for the topic and panelists we have with us today. With that, let's launch into our discussion. Harry, Gordon, great to have you on board. Thanks for joining us today. Let's start with a relatively easy question. How would you assess the perception of the collection industry by the outside world today? And has that perception improved or worsened in the past few years and why? Gordon, you come first alphabetically, so we'll give you the honor of going first today.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks for having me on the webinar today. It's a great topic, and my answer to your first question is really simple. I do believe it has gotten better. I believe that consumers are more knowledgeable, more aware, and the bad press, it was much worse over the course of the last decade and a half as it's been over the course of the last few years. So I would say it's gotten better, and it's really hard to judge because we are not on the front lines on the phones collecting money. We can hear the recordings. We can hear the consumer responses. I have to judge it based on people that I meet in my life, people that I meet outside of the workplace, people that ask me what I do, want to know what I do for a living. And their reaction to what I say is it's varied. I mean, obviously people are polite for the most part and don't want to disparage, but there are people that do say comments like, wow, you know, I could never do that job, or, you know, how do you sleep at night? And that is the opportunity to share, which we'll go into, I'm sure, later on in the webinar. But although I think it's improved, I think it's a far cry from where it needs to be. And I think that if we do a few of the things that we're going to discuss in today's webinar, we can make a big difference.
I would have to agree with your comments, Gordon. You know, I'm a second generation collector. When my family started their business in the early 70s, it was certainly a very different world. And, you know, whenever we talk about the change in the culture, the change of the perception, I always think it's important to at least note that this industry has always been a professional industry. And when we talk about the older days, when we talk about some of the change in culture, when we talk about some of the more rogue agencies that developed, thus necessitating the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act, it was still a very small percentage of the operators. I mean, this has been an industry largely of smaller organizations, family-run organizations, still is true today. You know, the overwhelming majority of collection firms, third-party, have 25 or fewer employees. There's certainly very large organizations too. But this issue of perception, I think, is very much related to the fact that we have lots of individuals today, lots of consumers that find themselves in difficult positions. And so their mindset sometimes is not very positive. And this is why I believe that, you know, making our perception as an industry better starts with the very people that work in the positions. The proper training of collectors, the concern, the true concern by a professional debt collector for the consumer on the other end of the line. I think the other thing that's changed a little bit too is that, you know, decades ago, we were pretty much a bad debt collection industry. This was debt that was written off, and then the whole debt purchase industry arose, and we were collecting on debt that had not only been written off, but had been sold. But today, we're more aptly, I believe, accounts recovery management businesses, because we've moved upstream. Many organizations now are collecting for original creditors on very early delinquencies, as of day one delinquency in medical settings. And so it is a much softer approach. And I think that change in culture, more of a service-oriented culture, is really part of the reason I think we've seen an improvement, and I think we'll continue to do so.
Excellent. So, I mean, if the perception has kind of been there sort of even maybe sort of to different degrees in the background, always sort of lurking there over the last two or three generations, is it a bad thing that there's a stigma associated with the collection industry? There's still, you know, there still are successful collection agencies out there. They still are collecting. Consumers still are picking up the phone. Is it a bad thing that they're, you know, even if it's maybe not as strong as it was, say, a few years ago, is it a bad thing that there is a stigma still attached to the industry?
So from my perspective, I think it's horrible. And there are people that have asked me, Gordon, why do you care so much about the image of the business? Is that an ego thing? And the answer is no. Think about this for a moment. If we call 100 consumers and we actually make right party contacts with 10 of those consumers and we convert 3 of those for a 30% conversion rate. Imagine if 20 people answered the phone. Imagine if 30 people answered the phone. The amount of money that we leave on the table every month, every year, is staggering, simply because people have this thought of how they're going to be treated and simply don't pick up the phone. By educating the consumers that this is, we're here to help you, that we're here to walk you through this, we're here to get this out of your life, and that we can do so in a positive way that not only helps you, your future, your credit, gets this you know, one more thing off your plate, and that we're on your side, then how many more people would pick up the phone if they knew that for certain that is what would happen? If we can educate the consumers to that, and we can increase our right party contacts 2 or 3 times as a result of it, then by default, our revenues will increase 2 to 3 times, our economy will improve, interest rates will continue to decline, and people will continue to lend. So to me, I think it's critical that somehow, some way, we all band together and work hard every day to figure out a way to touch as many people as we can and to educate as many people as we can in and outside of the office.
I would concur. And I think that, when you take a look at the negative stereotype, when I do my training and speaking, I often, allude to stories about the perception of our industry. And we joke about it a little bit from the standpoint that, if you go to a cocktail reception and you're mingling and somebody asks you, what do you do for a living? A lot of people who have been in collections a long time don't even want to admit the job that they do. They're an accounts recovery specialist. They're an adjuster. There's a long list of names that we call people who do professional debt collection. And I am always encouraging people to look someone in the eye and say, I'm a debt collector. And we joke that they sometimes might take a step away from you and not even realizing that they're doing it. And they say, oh, you're one of those. I think some of the negative stigma is almost more of a tongue-in-cheek type of stigma, like, oh, you're one of those debt collectors. Nobody likes you guys. Not always solely based upon the fact that people have had bad experiences. But I would concur, we've got to continue to work very hard because consumers are not picking up the phones like they used to. I mean, the other big discussion going on is how do you even have the opportunity to talk to someone because of the use of cell phones and the TCPA and just a litany of regulations that are out there. So when we finally get that opportunity to deal with someone, we have got to treat them with respect. We've got to make them want to answer the phone the next time.
I agree with everybody. And I guess the reason I asked that question is because I think it's important for people listening to this live, the people who are going to listen to the recording, or people just in the industry generally understand why this matters. It affects their bottom line. It affects, sort of their business that there is a stigma attached. So I asked the question and served it up, and you guys absolutely hit it out of the park. So thank you for that. We have a question that's come in from an audience member. So I want to use this as an opportunity to remind everybody, if you have a question for Gordon or Harry, type it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and we'll get it asked. The question is, if they don't pick up the phone, how do you educate the consumers of that? How do we band together and let consumers know that we are not the enemy when we can't even get them to pick up the phone and confirm RPC?
That's a great question. Was there more to it, or is that the question?
No, that's it. I was just saying, great question. I'm waiting for the great answer now.
So, there unfortunately isn't a great answer. I had an idea not long ago for, the ACA to potentially pitch in and to get enough people to maybe do a commercial nationally on behalf of the industry that, portrays us in a light and shows a great sequence and what can happen and that it's not what you expect. That would be extremely expensive and outlandish and crazy. But above and beyond doing something like that, there's really nothing we can do except for every single call, one call at a time, to train and for our reps to provide an experience. Because when you talk to one person if they're not walking away from that call saying, wow, I cannot believe that was just a collection call, then I feel like we have failed our industry. Number one, the old caveman collections of using threatening tactics, the fear of the unknown and otherwise to collect bills, it doesn't collect money anymore. It just doesn't. Being positive, nice, helpful, proactive, exciting, to make the consumer feel and realize that, hey, this person's really here to help me, to paint the illusion that you have one file on your desk and it's that consumer. And then also when they like to individualize themselves, that they're only one in the world that has the problem, that you explain how you help people in their situation every day. One person will then tell 5 people, will then tell 5 others. And it's gonna take time. The problem is, for every 100 great calls that our industry does on a daily basis, it's that one bad call that ruins those 100. We live in a society that feeds, thrives off people being compassionate to those that have gone through these situations, and also thrive on negative news media. So When we give that to them, we are doing nothing but shooting ourselves in the foot. I've imposed a zero tolerance policy. Everyone within the walls of my agency know that if you are even slightly rude to the consumer, that is your last phone call for my company. And we have to it takes a group effort. All the agencies in the country right now, if they're doing it that way, we have a huge chance to speed up that clock by years, but it will take time.
I think, Mike, the other part of this, and I agree with everything that Gordon's saying, is that we are involved in a communication conundrum these days. Today, for example, my cell phone at four different times rang, and I did not know the caller, and I did not answer it. And this is what consumers do today. All of us do that. If you're in my phone and the name comes up, I'm going to answer it. If not, I'm going to let you go to voicemail if you leave a voicemail, and I'll decide on whether to call back. And so what our industry is looking at are other methods to communicate with consumers. And this is, you might have heard the phrase omni-channel communication, where organizations might reach out to you by cell, or they might text you, or they might have send you an email or a combination, or communicate in the way that you've said, I want you to communicate with me. And so I think that will enhance our ability to actually touch the consumer, have a conversation with the consumer. And then when you're lucky enough to do that, kind of in line with what Gordon's saying, have given them a good enough experience with you on the phone on the one time you did talk that they're willing to answer again and engage with you. It's not a scary thing. It's not a disrespectful type of thing. You're here. That consumer collector is here in order to help that individual. And we've got to continue to keep that in mind.
Well, this is why you're a professional, Harry. You set me up for a great segue to introduce Todd Santa Maria from VOAPS, the sponsor for today's webinar, to talk a little bit about the company and about their products and services. Todd, it's all yours.
Thanks, Mike. And a special thank you to Gordon and Harry. We at VOAPS care very deeply about this subject and excited to provide this content today. We're always advocating for the good people in the industry, and today we have some of the best giving you this information. VOAPS Direct Drop Voicemail delivers voicemails to mobile phones without making a call to the phone. It is because we care about the industry and helping to avoid negative interactions that we've built our technology, putting the consumer first. When consumers receive voicemails without interrupting their busy days, they appreciate it and are more likely to make a call into the call center to handle their business. In fact, almost all of our clients report that they receive a higher inbound call rate from their direct drop voicemail campaigns than from other methods, including leaving messages manually. It's consumer friendly, yet very powerful for your business. Or as we like to say, stop calling and start collecting. Thanks again, Mike, Gordon, Harry. Continue on.
Awesome, Todd. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Also want to congratulate you again on your promotion. Well deserved. Thanks again to VOAPS for sponsoring today's webinar. So let's start to look at some possible solutions and how the industry can, how each company and each employee and each person in the industry can start to affect some change and maybe develop some more momentum to continue the work that's been done at changing the stereotype of the collection industry. And let's start inside the four walls of an agency. Harry, how can agencies train collectors to deal with debtors who make negative comments about the company or about the industry? Should agents engage or reply when someone makes these kind of comments, and maybe some ideas on what they should or shouldn't say?
Well, I think it really starts before they even have that engagement. And we touched on it a little bit with the last question, but the collectors working in our organizations have to feel good about the job that they do. They have to know in their gut and in their heart that they are performing a valuable service for business and that they indeed are in a position to help consumers. And when they truly buy into that and believe that reality, they're much more apt, I believe, to deal with some of the tougher situations you get involved in. We know as professional debt collection organizations that when we get some animosity used toward us by consumers. It is often not the fact that they dislike collectors. It's not the fact that they dislike the particular company that's calling or the particular collector. It's because they're frustrated. They're in a tough spot. The overwhelming majority of these individuals, you know, they're unemployed. They've got life challenges that are prohibiting them from making the money they need to take care of their obligations. And sometimes they lash out. And so we have to realize that we have to, as collectors, keep on point. We're never going to win an argument with a consumer who is trying to browbeat us and use profanity toward us and talk about the culture of our company being less than professional when we know that that's not the case. We've got to keep on track. We've got to channel that communication in a positive type of way, continually reinforcing that you're there to help and educating. Today, one of the key elements in collections is the ability to help educate the consumer on opportunities and programs and processes that are available to them, either through your organization or through others that can help get them out of the very difficult position that they're in. So that helping hand approach often will break down some of those barriers. We also have to realize that some people are never going to pay, and they utilize these this abrasiveness in their communication, you know, as a tool so that you don't call again and so that you can't collect the account. And as Gordon mentioned prior, we don't collect every account that comes into our company. So kind of like the old country song, know when to hold them, know when to fold them, you know, just as valuable knowing that next call might promote a payment. We have to also know when this is an uncollectible account and move on to the next one.
You know, to add to that, and again, I agree with Harry as well. You know, I train my people that, you know, when it comes to this job, it's not just about getting to the collection. I explain that you cannot build a house without a foundation. The foundation of every conversation, starts with earning and gaining the respect of the consumer. When you get a consumer on the phone, their guard is up. To them, it's a fight. Number one, because of the stereotype. And number two, not because they don't have the money or dispute the bill, they're embarrassed. They're being called because they got behind, they owe money, and now they're talking to a collector that they don't know about their personal finances. It's our job first and foremost, before collecting a single penny, to take that fight to a discussion and that discussion to a business deal. And using key words like, I understand and appreciate your situation. I deal with people all day, every day that have the same exact problems that you're facing right now, but I don't get off the phone with them until they're satisfied and I get this out of their life, and you're not going to be any different. I'm here to help you. Right then and there, you're saying things to them that they can't possibly be defensive about. Now, they may still have a gripe with the client. They still may be upset. They still might not have any money or financial problems, or they've lost their job. They have bad health. They've got a divorce. Everybody has to understand one thing. It's not personal. Do not lower yourself to personal level behavior. We have a job and a business that we can care about who we're talking to. And if we don't care, we can at least perceive that we do. And by giving them that positive reinforcement that you're there to help, not hurt them, and then you share all the positives that come out of paying the bill, rather than saying, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't, then that is the approach that gets that consumer to lower that guard and to have that discussion. And, you know, we end up having more consumers apologizing for their rash beginning to the call, or their impatience, or them being upset about their situation because they realize that we didn't call them to battle them. We called them to help them. And that stereotype is the common reason for that call to go that way. And it's why it's so important that we don't. And we have to do our part to give the agents the tools that they need, to give the consumers in this day and age, like Harry mentioned, the omni-channel communication, to use a great company like VoApps that will go out there and drop these voicemails without us banging their phones in the middle of the day at work. That's the kind of things that we can do to help our agents, along with the great training we give them. But when the dust settles, and I'll say it again, zero tolerance. And you have to make examples to prove to the crowd. Shunju said it bad. Sometimes you got to cut off a head. And I hate to say that and to say it in that way, but that Art of War book, you know, has taught me that if you don't set the example, or if you have the mentality that fee forgives all, we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, so those are some great points, Gordon. And, you know, even the regulators today, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, have been very proactive with their stance that, listen, if you're going to give bonuses and commissions, there has to be some type of element there, a metric there that will measure an individual collector's performance and their compliant nature. So I think we're all looking at the fact that you have to be compliant today. You have to treat people well. This is not a preference. This is a mandate. And in line with what you just noted, Gordon, I mean, I have lots of friends in the industry who have, you know, put a collector's head on the chopping block. Sometimes it was one of their most tenured collectors that was going a bit rogue, and, you know, it was three strikes and you're out. If you violate the rules three times, you're gone. And when you make those kind of statements with some of the most tenured people in the organization, or some of the maybe the most productive people, they're the highest recoveries coming in, that is an important statement to make, and it has to be done today. There are no excuses for disreputable and non-compliant cultures and organizations, none at all.
And I agree, Harry, and I want to make a mention, because, you know, a lot of people can say, oh, it's easy to say that, but, you know, really, would you really be willing to do it? And I will tell you, I'll never forget it. It was November of 2013. We were in the midst of the era of compliance and getting compliant. Our clients were all on board now. Everybody knew what needed to be done. We all had to make a change with our chief compliance officers and their staffs and bringing it to the floor and basically changing bad habits. If everybody knows about bad habits in this industry, the agents hate change. They hate it. That's why a lot of people hire people with no experience, so they don't have to retrain somebody that's been trained the wrong way. Well,
that's right.
So it was very difficult for us, but I'll never forget it. After 6 months of this initiative, I had approximately 800 agents, 35 very good agents that continued to go rogue, continue to be hardcore, continue to not conform because they either didn't want to or didn't try. And on one single day, I let all 35 of them go. Now, my scorecards took a hit, yes, financially, but 6 months later, I realized it was the best move I had ever made. And so you have to be willing to make examples out of those, because it's no longer just about our agency. It's about an industry of 6,000 agencies that are trying to make a difference that can't because of something they can't control. And that's another agency with agents that are going, walking the gray line way too far, pushing consumers to the point where they get complaints and lawsuits, and lawsuits are gonna come. But if there's something we can control, there's no excuse.
You bet.
So let's look outside the four walls of an agency. And I know that, you know, there are a lot of agencies that are out there doing work in the community and do a great job. And I'm wondering if you think that helps and maybe have any suggestions about what an agency can do in its community to help erase the negative stigma that the collection industry has. Gordon, have you got any ideas in that area?
I do, and have done many of them. But I will tell you that, you know, it's very interesting when you find organizations that you believe in to sponsor. But one thing that always worked for us was doing a food drive. Okay, yeah, that's pretty common. You know, anybody and everybody can do it. But when you feed families, and generally it was surrounded around things. I had a Green Day, which is an Employee Appreciation Day. But we did contests surrounding around who brought in the most canned goods and who considered or which teams fed the most families. And over the years it built, and by Christmas of 2018, we were feeding 7,000 families. And it's that that grabs the attention of the community. But it, again, you know, there's so many organizations out there, and you would have to do a heck of a lot individually as an agency with the community to make a difference, but it does make a difference. I think that ultimately, and I know where you're going to get into, you know, talking about the thank you cards, et cetera, coming up. But ultimately, something is better than nothing. And when you get involved with these things, it affects so many people. And when these people find out I was assisted or helped by a collection company, again, the word spreads. So I do believe it's valuable. I do believe it takes a lot. I do believe it takes everybody involved. And I do believe it takes more than just once a year. But yes, it can help.
I completely concur. Some of you that are members of ACA International, you may have heard of the Collector Challenge that we promote every year in the month of April. It benefits the ACA Foundation, where organizations all across the country have all types of community involvement and fundraising that they do, often that benefits local organizations. But for this event, it often benefits the foundation that goes into scholarships. And I think what happens is people in their mind, they've got this vision of what happens at the collection agency. And often that vision is very wrong. And it kind of normalizes the company and the community when that the company is out there having toy drives for children at Christmas time and providing meals to poor individuals and homeless individuals for the holidays. Ownership, management, frontline collectors should also be involved in the community in a variety of ways. I know when I ran my company, we were in a smaller town, under 20,000 people. I was the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce for 2 years. I was on the board for years. I was on the Boy Scout board. That kind of activity is very critical, and you will find that as you look at the successful companies today, they are almost always maintaining a culture of community involvement and fundraising for organizations. It's an important component of your success.
Okay, excellent. Let's move on and let's look at another area where collectors might have some luck. There's an old saying, bad facts make bad laws. And certainly, the negative stereotype that's associated with the collection industry can often be the result of some bad facts, bad interactions, just sort of not having enough information. So that sometimes leads to state, federal lawmakers sort of looking at the collection industry and trying to do what they can to be more, to protect consumers more where maybe that's not needed. So I'm curious if you think that whether agencies should be engaging with lawmakers and regulators at the local, state, and federal level, and how best that interaction should be made. Harry?
I think it's a resounding yes, but I say that with a bit of caution. It has to be an organized and a thoughtful process. Sometimes companies don't know what they don't know, and they may think that they're operating compliantly. And I might be referring to some smaller companies. I think, as companies get larger, they often develop layers of compliance and compliance officers and have more resources. But I think it's important to get to the grassroots. And I've done a lot of work on the local and state basis with my involvement with the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Associations over the years. I think if you're going to be involved, then you have to be up to speed on what the issues are. Make sure that you are crossing your T's and dotting your I's in your own organization. And we should be turning to the state units of ACA, ACA International on the federal level that has a very active presence in DC. Just give a little plug while we're on the topic that the Washington Insights for ACA International will be May 19th to 21st in DC, an opportunity for companies involved in our industry to go and meet with some of their federal legislators in a unified type of manner. I will tell you on the more local regional impact, if you can have your state legislator come into your organization, or a federal legislator, of course, but if you can get them in and let them see what you do, they are almost always very favorably impressed. I don't know that I've ever heard of a story where a legislator hasn't left a collection firm amazed, impressed, and with a different perspective on our industry.
Again, agreed. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, in Florida, we have the FCA. All of us have the ACA. There are associations throughout the country. But it requires involvement and participation. If we sit on our hands and wait for the next person to get it done, maybe it will get done. But imagine if we all were involved doing that. I mean, the ACA does an unbelievable march on the Capitol every year. We speak to senators and we speak to, you know, lawmakers about our industry, and they are shocked to hear the statistics. Remember, politics, being political, about votes, anything that can hurt the consumer, collections is automatically thrown in that bucket. So any chance we can to talk to lawmakers about all the good that we do, all the positive statistics, how much money our industry puts back on the average American household table every single month. Every time I've been in that position, the eyes widen and they actually say, I can't believe I didn't realize that. And again, that's due to the negative press, which is why we're having, you know, this webinar today. So not too much in depth there, but I will say that getting involved is half the battle. And if you join the associations, either in your state or on a national level, it helps everyone in this industry tremendously.
I think we need more organizations with an active engagement, Gordon. I think one of the problems that we have is there's a lot of companies say, well, there's others doing it. They're involved. We'll let the associations take care of us. We'll let the bigger companies. And they really need to hear, you know, from the very roots and fabric of our industry. You know, they need to hear from that company that has 8 employees or 25 or 50 employees, as well as the large organizations that have 2,000. They need to get a taste of what that culture is like, and quite frankly, how large our industry is and the need for the services that we provide.
I completely agree, Harry, and I'll say that again. You know, when you're in front of someone, you know, on the government side, they don't know, you know, how big your agency is. You are a person that knows your business. And, you know, we have to keep in mind who these associations are made up of. They're made up of people like me and you, like the audience today. You know, regardless of the size of the agency, we all have the same at stake. And we also have the same to gain. And I do feel, again, if we all, you know, just take the time to make it our mission collectively to change this image, we can do it. But if we don't start now, it's going to take another decade.
Sure. Agreed.
Excellent points. Another question that's come in. So another opportunity for me to remind everybody, if you have a question for Gordon or Harry, type it into the Zoom webinar control panel. The question is, don't collectors add to the negative image by not respecting the industry they work in, by saying things like, instead of saying, oh, I'm in the financial industry, instead of proudly saying, I'm a bill collector? Don't you have to respect yourself before asking for respect from others?
It all starts in the front line. It's I remember not long ago being at Collector Live, and the first sentence of the presentation was to get everybody to say, I am a bill collector. Harry mentioned it at the beginning. It's not a negative rub. Everything that goes on in our industry happens on the trenches, on the phones. And we have to rely on those individuals every day that have a very tough job, by the way. Now, how can we help that? We have to have an amazing environment that's fun to come to work, where the snooze button isn't smashed in the morning and that they're popping out ready to go, that they're able to make money, that they're able to learn something about finance, that they're able to take what they learn here to the next level, maybe with another job or another career. But we can do so much. And we all know that the average age is around 25. Most of them don't have college degrees. Most of them have no idea what they're going to do in their life. So the responsibility is not for us to expect them to do what we're asking. It's for us to create an environment that promotes it and is conducive to that. And a happy environment means happy collectors, means it all reflects on the phone. And once again, stopping it in its tracks with zero tolerance. It's what it takes. When you start giving chances, you know, it's just too easy to do it right. It's not hard to do it right. It's not hard to be nice. It's not hard to have thick skin, you know, especially when that is the culture that you've trained and that's all they know. So to answer that question more specifically, The collectors are everything to this, but we have to do what we have to do before they ever get on the phones for them to know what their job truly entails.
It takes a while for a collector to realize that it doesn't just have to be a job, it can be a career. And in line with what Gordon indicated about the age of the average person and the college degree or lack thereof, often people join collection firms because they need a job, they need a paycheck, and they have no aspirations of any kind of career. But if you can give them the right environment, the proper training, the proper nurturing, and get them over that six-month hump or one-year hump, let them see that this is professional and it is a role where you can help consumers and you're helping creditors and you're making a decent paycheck and you're remunerated through bonuses and commissions when you do a really good job, those are the people that stay. But as we noted before, the individual who posted this question is right. You know, we've got to be proud about what we do and hold our head high as professional debt collectors in order for there to be, the kind of change that we need.
We've talked about what a company can do inside. We've talked about in a community. We've talked about sort of working with lawmakers and legislators and regulators. And I'm curious because I'm wondering if this will stir up any debate or not, but what about working with consumer groups, consumer advocates, consumer groups, legal services groups? Should agencies be reaching out to them and inviting them in for conversations? And how, if you've heard of it or if you've done it, how have those worked out? And what is the best way for someone to set up those types of meetings?
I think I might defer to Harry on that one.
Yeah, my perspective on it is that most of those types of meetings are probably better held by the associations and organizations like the chapters of ACA, the units, and ACA International, or other trade organizations. The danger with having them come in, and I'm not completely opposed to the concept, but you've really got to be ready for that to happen. Anecdotally, I can tell you a couple of instances where it has worked well. One of which was a friend and colleague of mine who had this wasn't a particular consumer group, but it was a consumer collection or a consumer law firm, one of the predatory ones, that was continually after their organization. And he set up a meeting and he had this attorney come into his organization and gave him a tour. And the suits stopped. They formed a relationship. Now, that's not going to happen all the time. But this attorney had never even been in a collection organization. And when he saw the professionalism, he had kind of a change of heart. There have been also some successful programs across the country at unit meetings of ACA where they will have one of the most well-known consumer activists and or consumer predatory attorneys, where they're suing agencies, come to that meeting and talk about what they do and why and share ideas. And most of the time people are a little surprised that this man or woman that is this well-known figure that's been suing everybody is actually quite a nice individual interpersonally. They were expecting, just like people have a misperception of what happens in agencies, they thought that this was going to be, some kind of demon, and they're just actually average people that have a different perspective. So I think it's good to reach out. I think it's good to have understanding, but you've got to do it in the proper manner and with the right structure.
Sounds like your story of the lawyer who went on the tour is a real life sort of a Grinch who saved Christmas.
Yeah, right.
His heart grew three sizes that day.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we've kind of looked at a bunch of different areas in terms of how agencies and how the industry can approach this this situation and sort of maybe try and affect some positive change and sort of change the attitude of people out there. I'm wondering now, do each of you think, and Gordon, we'll start with you. You think you sort of have to take from each bucket? You've got to spend time in the community. You've got to spend time with your collectors. You've got to spend time with lawmakers and maybe consumer groups or maybe not, but definitely those other groups? Or is there one area that you think has the potential to have sort of a bigger bang and maybe should be, receive more of an emphasis from agencies that are really dedicated to try and fixing this problem?
You know, I think it encompasses all of the above. And my outlook is if we can double our revenue by doubling our contacts, by changing our image, then why would we not do everything it takes? Many of us for many years have put in the 12 and 15 hour days to build our agencies. And for those that have established are probably still doing that in some certain degree, thwarting a little bit of what we are attacked with daily, weekly, monthly, and taking an hour of our day every day, a few hours a week, or whatever you can afford to spare, and doing a little bit of all of it, and all of us doing that, I think that it cannot do anything but positive for us. So I look at it as, are we willing to put in the time and effort to not only help benefit our consumers and our clients, but our economy as a whole, and ultimately as a domino effect, our individual organizations? So why not leave it all out there on the table and do everything we can?
Yeah, I agree. I think individually for specific organizations and collection firms, I think they need to be doing it all correctly. They need to be putting resources into all of those areas. I think education, in my viewpoint, I might be a bit biased because I've been an educator for so many years, but it is so critical. Educating your team internally. This is why, Mike, I think what you have done with your organization over the last 4 to 5 years with offering this long list of webinars each year is a real boon to the industry, because it's giving people the opportunity to get a piece of education, something that they might be able to use out of a program to better their organization. And you're doing it over and over and over again. But people have to be willing to take the time. They have to realize that it's important. There is a mindset in a lot of organizations that we, quote unquote, can't afford to have our team off the phones to go to a training program or to take an hour or two or God forbid, go to a training class put on by an organization and they're out for the whole day. Those that understand the significance and the power of education will always realize they can take that time. And so the other great example is the Collector Live program that all of us on the call have been involved with intimately. We have so many organizations that shut down for the better part of a day and live stream that into their offices and have their teams watch it. It's a phenomenal tool. And we just need more companies that embrace that culture. And I think that will help as we move forward as an industry.
Well, first of all, Harry, thank you for the very kind words. It was very nice of you. Really, really appreciate that. And I think back to Gordon's point, and by all means, both of you or either of you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the key is to tie it back to money, tie it back to an improved RPC rate, tie it back to an improved collection rate, tie it back to, this is the investment you're making, and it's not just an investment. You're not just throwing money out the door. You're not just spending time on training your employees. You're not just spending time, raising money for charity, but there's also, there's a benefit that you're going to have, in the weeks, months, years ahead. And I don't know how you sort of develop that calculation. Certainly somebody smarter than I could probably figure it out, but I think that's the key, is sort of trying to figure out and make that connection for these people that, if you make your calls, even like to Gordon's point, slightly easier, you get slightly more connections and slightly more, conversations with people, then everything else sort of improves. The bottom line improves, morale improves, and I think it just becomes a freight train of momentum that continues to improve, step by step and day by day. I don't know if anybody has the answer to how to sort of connect, make that connection from, you know, doing all of this work to what the actual outcome is, or how it sort of ties back to an improved, you know, revenue. But if you do have any ideas or suggestions, you know, feel free to shout them out.
Well, I think you make a good point that, you know, all of these things we're discussing are good, but at the bottom line and the end of the day, we're running businesses that have to be profitable. And part of that profitability is having staff members that are at the top of their game. And I think one thing we have to continually realize, and when you think of our industry, it is about change. We have changed dramatically over the last 30 to 40 years as an industry. And as changes in technologies and changes in perception and changes in compliance and regulations and, you know, if you're not willing to change and if you're not willing to then commensurately offer new training programs and new education to bring people up to speed, you're not gonna make it. One of my favorite quotes I've used for years is change is inevitable, but growth is optional. So it's happening to you every day, all around you. Are you going to stick your head in the sand as an organization, as the owner of that 10-person shop or 30-person shop, and keep doing the same old thing? Or are you going to embrace the change and train your staff appropriately so that they're in the best position? You know, there's, I guarantee you, many agencies out there that are shaking their heads, scratching their heads, thinking, how do we text? Email? How are we going to do this? What is this VoApps thing where you drop these voicemail messages, but the phone doesn't ring? Does that really work? And companies that are more progressive, they try all of this out. Of course it works. That's why many companies do it, but you've got to be able to change in your organization. And that, I think, is really at the foundation of companies that will survive or not survive, their ability to change.
Well said. I know there are a lot of agencies out there that get comments, emails, even so far as they get cards and notes and letters from consumers thanking them for the work that the agency did and sort of helping solve a financial problem and improve somebody's financial situation. Gordon, I'm wondering, is that something that's happened, you know, at the agencies you work on? And is there anything you've done with those letters, or do you see anything that can be done with those kinds of testimonials to kind of help change the industry's image?
So I think that I worry about publishing them from a privacy perspective. Not that a consumer would necessarily say no, but then they're putting out there that they were in collections, right? So what we try to do is we try to go to our, you know, consumers, if we've had a great experience with them, and ask them to give us an online review, for example. That's a great thing to do. Online testimonials are what people look at. And, you know, all too often, if we don't, you know, encourage the consumer to, hey, ma'am, if I did a great job, sir, if I did a great job for you today, if I helped you out, could you take 2 minutes of your time and go to my company profile on Yelp and give us a nice review? And about half of them might do it. But, you know, taking those, I do keep the thank you letters. I do love to show them to the clients. I love to read them on the floor to the staff. I think it's important internally to realize that the consumers can be very appreciative for those people that go above and beyond to help them out of their situation. But I'm not so sure about publishing them from a privacy perspective, and from a choice on the consumer side, if they want to leave a review, at least they have that choice. Now, I suppose you could post them on your website and block out the names, but because of the stereotype, I'm not sure how, just how much integrity would go into that from the public. But I do believe reviews on Yelp and otherwise, if promoted by the agents to the consumer after good experience, are massively helpful.
Yeah, I overall certainly agree with what Gordon has said. I think that sharing these internally, there's a tremendous amount of value there. I think it's great for the collectors. Like the one individual that posed the question earlier about respecting what you do is where you start. You know, you can really have a better perspective on your job and feel better about what you do when you start looking at these letters. Now, keep in mind, when we talk about agencies getting letters, they don't come in, you know, the bin fulls, and they have a separate employee that has to open these every day. But the nice thing is that when someone takes the time as a consumer to write about their experience and how you helped them, that helps reinforce just how important this job is that we do every day. And I think that that's where the real value comes.
Do you advocate using anything like an automated customer service or customer satisfaction survey at the end of a call, especially maybe, you know, where you can sort of maybe set it up so it's just on, you know, I don't want to say the good calls, but the calls where, you know, at least the other person's sort of engaged and honest and having a decent conversation, even if they're not making a payment. But do you advocate, you know, maybe using those kind of surveys to sort of help reinforce that as well?
I definitely do. I plan on implementing that. I haven't yet. And I know people that have, but I don't think it can hurt, especially when, you know, we do have technology. We have a certain number of quality people. And I'm talking not just me, all agencies. But to be able to hear from the consumer and to be able to segment those rougher experiences and being able to go back to those recordings can be very beneficial from a training perspective. So why not?
We've got a lot of call analytics that go on today, and, you know, we know how that call's going, you know, 10 seconds into the call with the voice analytics that are used today. But I would agree. I think that more and more organizations like Gordon is considering doing it are moving in that direction. Some are doing it now. And quite frankly, you know, I want to have an opportunity for a consumer to express their dissatisfaction. I'd love to hear the good stories, but as an operator, I would want to know, why aren't you happy? And let me know before you go to, you know, an adversarial attorney or you file a complaint with one of the regulators. So I think that that's where the value is too. You know, let's feel good about it, but also let's find out what went wrong if we missed it along the line with our other analysis tools so that we can make ourselves better.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, we've just about run out of time, but I wanted to give Gordon and Harry each one more chance to summarize their comments, share any other parting words of wisdom, maybe get a chance to talk about something they didn't get a chance to talk about because I didn't, you know, ask the question. The conversation just didn't head in that direction, but to offer some concluding remarks from each of them. Harry, would you mind going first?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think the most important thing out of this session today is for us to realize that we are members of a vibrant, growing industry. We've had our challenges, but it is a great place for people to settle in and have a respectable career. And the only way that happens is for the people that own and manage organizations to create a culture that is focused on compliance, that is focused on education, that is focused on growth, that is financially solvent enough through their effective management to see the organization through the change that is necessary. So when I look back at my experience as a kid in the early 70s, working on a small family organization and working my whole career in the industry, I can say that I'm proud of being part of this industry. And I've always admired those who have excelled and made a name for their organizations as being some of the best, because I know the work that it's taken for them to do so. So great, great commentary today, some good questions that you provided. I think that we are here to stay as an industry. It will continue to change. And I certainly look forward to being part of this industry in a variety of capacities moving forward into the years to come.
Well, certainly, I speak for all of us. Absolutely, Gordon. I say the industry is better off for having Harry in it. And Gordon, the industry is also better off for having you in it as well. Why don't you share your concluding remarks?
Well, if you're on the call and you participated in today's webinar, the chances are you love this industry and you love what you do, as we all do. I feel that we have a responsibility. And with all that we've gotten from our careers in this very different, and all the hell that we've been through, I want you to remember that this hell was a result of what our predecessors had done and the actions that were done and the lawlessness that surrounded this industry for many years. We have to take accountability for those that come after us and leave a legacy for them where they do not have to face the same challenges we have that we didn't create. If we do the right things every day, from the collector in the call all the way up to the technology we use and how we operate our companies, and that we participate and help each other with associations, events, and getting involved, then we're going to leave behind for those that come behind us a world of not harmony, it never will be, but a world that's much easier than what we endured. We have a chance to leave a mark that says our era, the people that are involved with the industry in this period of time, changed that bad image to good for good. And those that come behind us, again, don't have to go through what we've gone through. I think the industry's worth it. I think we all will benefit from it. And I just think we have that obligation to our consumers, our clients, our customers, the economy, and again, those in our industry that come and are the future leaders of tomorrow. So yes, great webinar, and I appreciate being a part of it.
You know, Gordon, awesome. Every time I listen to you, I want to say amen.
Yeah, amen.
You lead a revival. Every presentation I've ever heard you do such an outstanding job. And the cool thing is, I know you believe it. Okay, these aren't just words coming out of your mouth. You live the life and you walk the walk. So happy to be part of the program with you today.
Thank you, Harry. I've been doing it since I was 19, and it's done so much for my life, good, bad, and indifferent. I genuinely love this industry, but even more so, I love the people in it. And I feel like we're a special group. We're the underdog, but that we can accomplish more than anybody will ever give us credit for if we just work together and make it happen. So thank you for the kind words. Appreciate that.
I'm ready to start making calls, and I don't even work in an agency. So I guess that's all of the, all of the words we need to say about how, what a great motivator that Gordon Beck is. So Harry, Gordon, thank you so much for participating in this conversation today. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights. I also want to thank one more time VOAPS for sponsoring today's webinar. Todd and the team, thank you so much for sponsoring. Please go to www.voaps.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey to let me know how this webinar went for you, but also to share any ideas, any pain points, any topics you want to learn more of, because that's usually how these webinars get started. So feel free to share any ideas, and you may see them coming up in a webinar in the not-too-distant future. And I hope everyone stays tuned to AccountsRecovery.net for more news, more webinars in the very near future. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of their day. After hearing Harry and Gordon, I can't imagine how that's not possible. Once again, thank you very much, gentlemen. That was an excellent job.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Great job.